you can always reach the program at 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeedy. 15 minutes past the hour. We do enter the second hour of the broadcast this evening. Under the... And the visual is so profound. Under the email heading of white people, this email in from, and that's all it said, this email in from Sandra. New Jersey mom accused of taking daughter in tanning booth. Tanning booth mom calls arrest for taking daughter five. A misunderstanding. It was a sunburn. Dad says. Oy vey. How bad is it? Extra. This comes from the meaningless entertainment propaganda emailer PR person that sends me stuff. Extra. Snooki reacts to tanaholic mom. You are not supposed to take kids there. You know, when Snooki is telling, then for immediate release, musician shares wife's story during Skin Cancer Awareness Month. Yeah, this woman took her 5-year-old daughter into a tanning bed and roasted her real good. I tan, she doesn't. Said Patricia Krentzel, 44. I'm in the booth, she's in the room, that's all there is to it. Do you remember the episode of Seinfeld where Kramer was buttering himself? Yeah, this woman makes him look pale. And that was, of course, using makeup. Just saying. Let's keep it going. Let's get it going. Hey, welcome to the program. Anybody? Okay. Hey, welcome to the program.
Happy prayer meeting Wednesday.
Well, hallelujah, glory, Brother Albert. Are you in the spirit?
Glory, glory. Oh, I'm in tongues. I love you.
Yes.
What did I tell you about Sister Snooki? I told you Sister Snooki had some sense. It's a David Amber, folks. You got to watch with David Amber. She's not that stupid. See, she's just a 21-year-old in a friggin' house with a bunch of booze. What do you think? Come on now, let's be honest with ourselves.
Yeah. See, I did that back before reality television was born. Back then, they called it a fraternity house.
Mm, exactly. A whole franchise of films and everything that's still here with us. If I may, I'd like to mail a prayer letter, you know, to the universe, if I may.
Oh, do please.
Okay.
It's good. Now make sure you do not leave the God of Irony out, because the God of Irony.
Oh, no, hang. This is directly to her. Dear mighty goddess of irony, thank you for your signs of guidance for those with love and compassion for their fellow life forms living with eyes of conscience. Please continue to deliver your most magnificent justice on those filled with hate and fear as the examples for those that know you and seek to evolve. Thank you. Fear is the mind killer.
And all God's and all the goddess of irony's children said, "Amen."
You know, when you see these things, or when you see them, just we have
Tony Perkins came out. Gary Bauer came out.
Oh yeah.
Yoo-hoo.
I mean, now I got to get a divorce. I got to start drinking. I can't ever see my children again because I can't be pro-family.
No.
How can I be pro-family now?
Yeah, you're not a bigot. You can't be pro-family. I mean, that one sermon was replayed on James Dobson's radio program, Albert. And we all remember that James Dobson is the man who said that a pro-family father will take a little boy into the shower and shake his winky at him to keep him from catching the gay.
Aren't we supposed to be beating our kids?
Until they cry real tears. I guess that's what you do after you've shaken your winky at him.
Okay, that sounds like good advice. I mean, keep raising kids is so complicated. How's anyone to even cope or get by? I mean, of course that's how we do with it. Let's beat them and wiggle our wiggies at them. Yeah, let's do that. Let's take them to the shower and into the bathhouse and into the tanning booth and, you know, because you know that lady's got to be something, right? She had to look good for church. Or
have you seen the picture?
You know?
I mean, I realize that talking about photos on the radio is dancing about architecture, but have you seen the picture of Mrs. Krentzel? Have you seen the picture? Jesus Christ, I've got an old baseball glove that's lighter than her. And you know, and you just know she walks in at the tanning booth and everybody there says, "Oh, you are just glowing. Oh, get in the booth some more."
Well, her skin probably worked up so she could sit in there for an hour.
I mean, she looks like, well, okay, did you ever, I don't know, were they gone by the time you were traveling with your family, Albert? Because I know you mentioned that y'all traveled around some. Do you remember Stuckey's?
Yeah.
Little roadside stores, you know, blue, and you could get a pecan log roll, and they sold cherry juice and stuff like that.
Firecrackers.
And those little Adams magic novelties, yeah, and lots of candies, lots of things made with pecans because it was all started by a pecan farmer. But they would also always have these sort of carved tiki heads out of whole coconut husks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She looks like one of those. Now everybody below the age of say 32 has gone, "What is he talking about?" Well, it's from a bygone era of an America just beginning its fascination with its open highway system. There used to be these little, and all the roadside stands had them. You know, down south where I was more familiar, there were places like Early's and Stands, and they had those hanging coconuts and the best smoked sausage you ever ate in your life, and great coffee. My parents loved the coffee. Good coffee was a big thing back then, before Starbucks.
Now they're called 7-Eleven, or Special K, or Circle K, you know.
Yeah, but they're not nearly as fun.
No,
I think one of the old Stuckey's on I-65 is now a place that sells rather shocking marital aids, but it's got a billboard right by it saying, "You are going to hell if you go in there."
Oh God! You know, well, I guess it's just that pile of dirt we often sweep under the rug is just kind of emerging back out under that rug.
That's,
you know,
and that's the thing. You can't sweep it under the rug, Brother Albert. You got to get your little dustpan out and sweep it up and throw it in the trash where it belongs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or even better, just throw it in your yard. It's dirt. That's where it belongs. Out there. Let it reconstitute with something living. You know what I mean? Why not?
Yeah.
Because that's what these people need. They have no connection to these things. How dare you? How dare you? Go after and they're just gay. Don't you ever get your mind past the fact that, oh, what they do in the bedroom? Don't worry about what they're... Don't... Why are you thinking about what they're doing in the bedroom? Stop that. Okay? You know, like, don't you ever... Didn't you ever ask yourself, what is that? Why do people, like... do they like girls as, like, I like, you know, do they like boys like I like girls, or do they like boys like I like, you know what I mean? Don't you ever look at yourself and see, you know, how you approach things? And isn't there a magnetism? I mean, if you're straight, I happen to be straight, so there's a magnetism to women, for me. Don't you think that same...
Yeah, but see, and see, I think it's I'm of two minds on this. Like I said, on the one hand, you've got those males in the fundamentalist community, Albert, and they feel that same magnetism you and I do. On the other hand, there is a probably, I would submit to you that within the fundamentalist community, there is probably a proportion of homosexuality that's actually higher than it is in the ordinary population at large, because they say in the general population it's about 10%. I would guess it probably runs upwards of 25%. Because it's a place to go if you're desperately trying to repress your own sexuality. Because they'll tell you that it's all dirty. Okay? And for that side of it, it's like, it's magnetism, isn't it? I mean, there are those, you know, you take those two poles of the magnet and you can feel them pushing each other apart.
Yep.
But then you flip the magnet over and they go, bink! And they're stuck together. Yep. And you've got these repressed repressed profoundly gay people who are tormenting themselves, trying to push away at their sexuality when they keep going bink, and every time they go bink, that magnetism they're feeling is toward another guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so they run off and they read Romans, or they flagellate themselves. Or, you know, they put the trench coat on, turn the collar up, pull the ball cap down low, and go into the Amanda B. Reckoned With Memorial Tavern. And just look longingly at the drag queens.
Yeah.
It's sad. It's really pathetic when you get right down to it.
It is.
And if they weren't such hypocrites, you know, again, I reiterate, it ain't about the sexuality, it's about the hypocrisy. You know, come on out. Go to the downtown lesbian celebration and have a good time.
Yeah.
Because there's no dress rehearsal. Yeah. This is not dress rehearsal. This is it.
Yeah. Even
if there's an afterlife with the pearly gates and all those things that those ancient people who lived in a dirty, filthy desert thought would be a really nice way to not have, you know. The pearly gates and streets of gold, that's all from a people who lived in filth, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they just, mm-hmm. when they died, they just wanted to go somewhere that was clean and comfortable. You know, about 72 degrees, you know, the most you'd possibly need is a light jacket. You know, not a bunch of heavy robes, and there's no sandstorms and dust storms. So that was the paradise they envisioned. So let's assume that that's real for a minute, Brother Albert. When these repressed people go there, do they think they're not going to be gay anymore? Is gay something that only happens in the flesh and not in the spirit? Because I can tell you, I've never sensed any. There's never been anything physical about a person that has said, probably gay. To the extent that I even do it, but it is a matter of personality. It's a way of living and dealing with the world. And that, you know, that goes back to what Peter Godbold used to say. You know, the right wing is so obsessed with the sexual aspect of it, they have no interest whatsoever in the spiritual side of it. And that's the one thing they are, these right wingers want to deny, that there is a spirituality to it. That it is the function of our common shared human heritage.
Mm-hmm.
And when they deny the spirituality of it, what they're essentially saying is that gay people aren't really human.
They go on their witch hunts.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, and essentially their enemy is within. You know? There's no way you can have that much hatred.
And be okay.
Something you're hiding. Yeah, I mean, it's just not healthy to carry that kind of hatred. I mean, yeah, we get all upset and ragged on, and, you know, I can't stand Republicans. I can't stand them. But when I'm in their presence, I don't hate them. If anything, I'm trying to show them a better way. If anything, I mean, you know, and I'll try to do what I can in terms of a conversation, but I don't hate them. You know, and I don't let them run roughshod. There ain't no doubt about that.
No, but I'll tell you this much. Agnes gets frustrated with me. Because, for instance, we were in the parking lot of the grocery store yesterday. And, you know, this is
I can
not,
see it.
Yeah. We're in the parking lot of the grocery store yesterday. We're walking to our car. So there we are, vulnerable little pedestrians, walking, you know, walking around, walking through Lake Kroger, you know, the low point where the rain collects.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how it is with angled parking. You know, there's only one way to go into an angled parking space. So naturally, here comes this giant-ass SUV, driven by some woman, and I say that only to differentiate that it wasn't some guy, just driven by some woman. She's coming the wrong way down the parking alley, and you know what she does, right, Albert? You've seen it. It drives you crazy, too. I'll bet you. I got a dollar that says you've seen this, and you go, oh, idiots! She's coming the wrong way down the parking lane, and whips her giant Canyon Arrow the wrong way into the parking slot, and then proceeds to engage in the automotive acrobatics trying to get squared up in the slot, when all she had to do was just loop through, you know, jump to, come back, and bang, she could have gone, and it wouldn't have taken any more time than the gyrations did. And I'm And as the car's coming along, I look at Agnes and I go, looky here, honey, we got a show enough idiot. And she goes, will you just stop? And then the car turned in and I saw the Friends of Cole sticker. And I said, I win, lo, yea, verily, I am vindicated. Atne ute aitbre. All praise the god of irony.
Exactly. Thank you, goddess.
And Agnes just looks at me and goes, I hate it when that happens. I hate it when that happens.
Well.
But yeah, it's like an email that I got from Isaac earlier today. You know, it's too much video to do on it. It's these fundamentalist Christians who are like, you know, late 1970s, early 1980s slam dancing, while some DJ MCs in tongues. And the only note that Isaac attached to the note was, or the only thing he attached to the note was, be advised, these people walk among us and they get to vote.
Yes. And they don't forget.
And they're gonna go and they're gonna vote pro family.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause we don't want no lesbian parades.
You know.
I know.
What a sad way to experience life. How depraved they live. You know. They always talk about themselves being persecuted. You know, and they make up stories about it, and they're the ones that persecute. They're the ones that hate. You know, and if they get hate, it's because of how they are. You know, it's because of how they approach people and how they talk to people. They'll protest funerals, and they'll, you know, constantly try to write laws that make, you know, oh, the end of your pregnancy, you're pregnant. You know, and just create and all just magic hocus pocus nonstop, and just. They're just terrible. It's just, they wonder. You wonder why people are kind of at least tiny, oh, don't put your flag on that monument. Keep the Ten Commandments off. You know, you don't want the Ten Commandments? Well, what about Sharia law? Muslims! I mean, ridiculous.
I'm sorry, just the way you did that.
Yeah.
I mean, did you hear about the conference they had the other day? Texas Betsy sent me a note about this. Pam Geller, who is one of those uber right wing, never saw a Muslim, she didn't want to kill, pro Israel types. She's got some sort of sick, twisted radio show. So she has this conference at some Hyatt, and I don't remember what town it was in. Oh no, but she went to Michigan to have it. It was in Detroit. And it was going to be a conference about the rights of women in Islam. Why do I always do go into that voice when I do? Yeah, because
it's your preacher voice.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah, you need a good preacher voice.
So it's going to be about the rights of women in Islam. So some Islamic women showed up to go to the conference. They were, of course, denied entry. And they asked the security guard, where's the Women in Islam conference? And the security guard says, the what? The Women in Islam conference. It's been advertised for weeks. The Women in Islam conference. Women's rights in Islam. Oh, you mean the anti-Islam conference? That's what they're calling it now. It's up there on the second floor, but you can't go, honey. Now, who knew that there was a redneck security guard in Detroit? I think it boils down to the fact that I don't do a good Michigan accent.
Oh, they're there?
But no. Yeah. Oh, you mean the anti-Islam conference? Second floor. Mm. You can't go.
Ugh. Ugh.
Because, you know, they went with their headgear on.
Of course. You know. Jesus.
Right, because to be fair, their God won't like them if they don't wear their headgear. I mean, all religion is nuts. I mean, we understand that, right?
Yeah.
But you know what? If you sleep better at night because of your headgear and you think God likes you a little better in this incredibly confusing universe, wear the headgear. It's fine by me. No problem. Just don't ask me to wear it.
Mm-hmm.
Although if I came from a culture that had wandered in the desert for 10,000 years, I might have a rather cultural... emotional attachment to it too, because that stuff comes in handy in blowing sand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why my culture wore kilts, because every now and then, as a guy, it's nice to get that cool breeze off the Hebrides up amongst the undercarriage. It's pleasant, and yet the wool is heavy enough to keep it from freezing.
I know. It's just they're oblivious to everything. They don't ever ask why this is this way. They just use it as a way to say, you're different than me. It's, you know, sneeches with stars on their bellies all over again.
And I guess they never... You know, I remember when I was in first grade, I think I had to wait 6 weeks before I got to check out the sneeches and other stories from the school library, because everybody got it before me.
Hmm.
And I really wanted to, and I sat there. There was a story in there called The Pale Green Pants, just about a pair of pale green pants that ran around by night. And I thought at the tender age of six that that was the funniest thing that I had ever, ever, ever read. And I went back and reread it when my children were little, and it's still funny, by the way, but it's part of the sneeches and other stories. And I was thrilled. You know, I was a pretty good reader by the age of six. And I'm sitting there reading it, and I'm reading it to Mom, reading it to Dad, and they were just laughing their heads off. And you know, the sneeches is a valuable tale to, and I guess maybe they just didn't, they never made it onto the school was out by the time the sneeches got around to them. Is that it?
I sure hope not, because that's a fundamental law. It's like a law of human nature, and it's like a parable of, you know, of, oh, yeah, we're not all that different, aren't we? You know, it's the proper way to look at your fellow human being. You know, you look at that story, and, you know, I tell my kids all the time, the best mistakes are, you know, other people's mistakes, or daddy's mistakes, or, you know, whatever. If I make a mistake, you better learn from it, because I'm paying for it. You better eat it. It's free. Eat it. It's another person's mistake. Listen to the story. What does the story tell you? And, you know, my kids get it. They understand. They asked me today, what's prejudice? Because we were talking about...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they said, what's prejudice? And I had to, you know, because now they're at that point now that they're, you know, they hear all these words that they hear all the time, and they're like, and I tell them, you know, like, you know, daddy will talk to you like you're, you know, a big person. If you don't understand a word, you know...
You have to ask.
Ask, yeah. And that, you know, so they're like, what's prejudice? They don't know what prejudice is, because we don't teach them prejudice.
Because they haven't been raised around any.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, I mean, I tell them it's there, and I tell them it exists, and, oh, why would anyone look like that?
And, you know, even when, it's even uncomfortable doing that, Brother Albert, because even when doing that, you feel like you are the serpent introducing the fruit into the garden.
Yes. Yeah, you feel like, you know, you gotta be careful with how you, you know, you don't want to spill this oil in the wrong way. You don't want to think, you know, you want them to know that this is not the right way. And they, you know, you have to say it very carefully, you know, on how you word it. And I don't know. I don't think it's all that difficult. I mean, why do you live with hate in your heart? That's living with fear in your heart. Why are you afraid? What are you afraid of? What is it that you're afraid of? And I constantly, anytime I confront, and I do constantly confront right-wingers, what are you afraid of? What is it that you live in fear? Do you like, are you happy living in fear? Are you really happy living in fear of everyone that's a different color than you? Of everyone that's maybe he likes you? Do you ever think that's a compliment? If some guy has the cojones to come up to you and say, hey, I think you're attractive, and I don't care if you're gay, but I just think you're attractive and I just wanted you to know. Yeah, maybe you are, eh? Or he's fishing. Don't go, say, hey, well, thank you very much. I'm not gay, but I definitely appreciate that because, you know, women don't even tell you that. They don't ever say, oh, you know, they keep it all hush, 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 hush. And it's nice to be told, hey, you're good looking. Thank you. Take it as a compliment. They're not going to rape you. They're not going to jump on you. I mean, come on. What do you think? I mean, goodness gracious. You should.
No, but the clamp down, tamp down, strap down, hung up. Yeah, they're kind of hoping. Maybe they will. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
You know, little duct tape, little tennis ball, little, you know. I mean, and the next thing you know, the youth minister is found in a bed in Montgomery wearing three rubber wetsuits with a pair of dildos in places that we won't discuss.
Oh, God. I mean, you know, it's just ridiculous. It's just utterly shameful. And they should be, yeah, you should be persecuted for being so goddamn hateful. Stop being so hateful. You think that, I mean, read your goddamn Bible for 10 minutes and then come back to us. You know, give me
Yeah, or don't. There's a lot of scary stuff in there.
Well, yeah, true. Have David Attenborough read it to you.
Maybe Matthew, Mark, and Luke and stop there. Because the next thing you know, you're getting into hallucinations about flying horses and apocalypses and blood, and their eyeballs rotted in their socket, and yay, their tongues became as big as mushmelons, and hallelujah, and the Lord was coming, and no.
Yeah, read the red words.
Yeah, read the red words.
Yeah, just read those. And not only that, you should maybe, you know, Nick, before you start going all crazy about Thomas Jefferson being an evangelical Christian, maybe you should, like, first recognize the fact that, you know, according to Revelations and blah, 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 at the very back end of the book there, the most recent edition, it's like he committed the most grievous sin of all, hasn't he? Because he went in there to write his own. This is what I think the Bible is. He wrote his own Bible. So what do you mean, evangel? How can an evangel? What are you talking about? He just committed, you know, according to the book, that's your book? Okay, well, this is his Bible. Why don't you read his Bible and see what his Bible says? You know, it's everything taken out of your Bible, but without all that other...
And see, there's all of that stuff out there, and dadgummit, you know, that's why, you know, John Stewart letting him on the show was a little bit bothersome. Because he did not have time to peel this guy like the grape in the way, that he deserved. Do you see what I'm saying? He didn't have time to eviscerate him. He didn't have time to prove him to be a fraud. No, they just, you know, you got a new book out, so you get to go on Jon Stewart's show, and you get to babble your babble, and then, you know, Jon Stewart throws you a couple of softballs, and you tell a story about a 5-year-old kid who was 10 years old, who got lifted out of his chair for praying over his food, who was actually fighting. And, oh, okay, well, that's fine. Well, you know, best of luck. Go and sin no more.
Nope.
I mean, it's like going back to the tanning bed business. We just got an email in from Robert in Australia, Albert. And he said, as if we don't get enough sunlight in Australia, some people here still found the need to use tanning beds.
Mm.
Oh, you know, real Darwin Award winners.
What would Chopper Reed say about that? Anyway.
Not anymore, though, Robert says.
Yeah.
At least here in New South Wales, tanning beds will be completely banned by 2014. Why? Because they cause skin cancer, and we already have enough sufferers. It's expected that other states in Australia will follow. Well, let this story get a little bit of legs, and I really appreciate Robert sending it along, because This is, you know, this is a case of a government made up of its popularly elected people acting in its own societal best interests, in which there is a value in not having your citizens burn up of skin cancer. But let Brian Fisher of the American Family Association, or Matt Barber, or any of those other goobers, James, you see, Jesus was a Jesus gave us the freedom when he was God to have tanning beds and to make a choice for tanning beds, and Jesus wants us to have a choice, don't you know?
And
Rand and Ron Paul will be out there on the Hustle. You see what they've done in Australia? They've taken away their rights to tanning beds. Next thing you know, they'll be taking away their rights to have guns, and then the Austrian people won't be free no more. Because, you know, that's really how I define freedom, Albert, is that, you know, the freedom to bake myself in a tanning bed and get really, really deep, level 5 melanoma.
Yeah, I judge my freedom by, you know, the unregulated markets. Yeah, unregulated markets make me feel free.
Yeah. You know what? I'm so glad that none of that awful communist Obamacare stuff has kicked in. Because I went to the doctor today and I found out how free I am. Man, am I free!
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Scott Brown's daughter's free?
No. She's a lot less free than I am. Because if Scott Brown's daughter, you know, he hates that Obamacare, but if Scott Brown's daughter gets sick and goes to the hospital, she's really, really not free. She's dependent on the nanny state because she goes to the doctor and they don't send her a bill.
Oh, no. Persecution.
Yeah. She is a slave in a totalitarian regime. I, on the other hand, Brother Albert, I am free. Yeah, right. Here's how free I am. So this was the follow-up from my little hospitalization scare of last week. And, you know, the nice thing is, I don't have cancer. I don't have a rotten pancreas that's going to have to come out where I have to take insulin shots every day for the rest of my life and, you know, grow hair in strange places that have never grown hair before. God damn, I didn't even know there was a follicle on my toenail. You know, that kind of stuff. I got a rotten gallbladder. And I'm not trying to just talk about this, but this is how free I am. I got a rotten gallbladder, and I had a lovely conversation with the surgeon, whom I really respect, who was straight up with me. I said, you know, I'm a nervous wreck about this, Doc. He said, I've never had surgery. I'd be scared out of my wits at the thought of having done to me what I do to people. He said, so you're okay, which was nice. Maybe he was lying. But he sure came across as truthful, and it put me at ease. Okay? And we talked about realities and things that yada, yada, yada. And so I was okay, you know, I'll get the surgery somewhere down the road. But this comes around to how free I am. I'm so free, I'm going to have to save up really big time until I can do it. Because I went into the emergency room on Sunday night, was transferred to a room in the wee hours of Monday morning, and was discharged at about 10:30 on Tuesday afternoon, okay? And I was free the whole time. You know how I know how free I was? Because I'm so free, I get to pay $8,130 for that.
Freedom!
Yeah, boy. And I'm also so free that that if I want to have this rotten little Republican removed from my abdomen, that I get to pay another $5,000. So I am one free mofo, okay? I am free. I don't have none of that communist Obamacare weighing me down and keeping me up in the middle of the night, making me wonder about what would happen if I didn't have to pay $14,000 to get the Republican taken out of my my abdomen. I'm free. I am sleeping the sleep of the just.
Yeah,
I'm free.
Yep, that's right. You're as free as the people that get vaporized by our freedom bombs.
Yeah, I mean, consider the lilies. I am all kinds of free.
Mm-hmm. Oh, freedom! Don't you love freedom? Don't you love being an island unto yourself? You know.
Yeah, I ain't a part of no Maine. I am. I'm a rock. I'm an island.
And
a rock feels no pain, and an island never cries, right?
Yeah, you're going Galt.
Yeah, if only I had some Galt gold coins to trade for my cholecystectomy. Maybe, I don't know, you know, because if you read Atlas Shrugged, the way it's all supposed to work, Brother Albert, is that John Galt has some gold coins, but he wants some cabinets in his cabin somewhere in a remote holler in Colorado. So you make cabinets, so you go to John Galt's house, and you make John Galt some cabinets, and John Galt gives you one of his little John Galt gold coins. And then you go to the doctor and give him the gold coin to take out your gallbladder. And I'm trying to figure out how this works. I mean, do I go to the hospital and offer to do progressive talk radio for them only for 3 hours? I mean, how's this work? We'll talk for surgery. By God, I'm free.
It's a heartbreaking thing. I know you guys are kind of, you know, you're talking about online voting and kind of foo-fooing it. But wouldn't it be nice if, you know, you take your social security number, you have a bank, you know, and we as people get to set the goals of what we want our elected leaders to then do. And, you know, it would be interesting. I just want to see what it would be. You know, do your duty, go vote on this little poll that just kind of explains issues, has links, da-da-da-da-da, you know, take a little poll. Where do you want your money going? That would be nice. That's what I mean when I talk like that, is I want to have a little bit more say. Because I know where I would vote. I know I want universal health. I don't want Obamacare. I want universal health care. I don't want, you know, I don't want anybody to get any kind of fine, or I don't want you worrying about, I want you getting better. I don't want you worrying about money. I don't want you worrying about how free you are. I want to be free enough to say, the money that I pay in taxes, I want to go to this, not to this. You know, and I think that would set an agenda. I mean, shouldn't we be setting an agenda here? You know, I don't know. I mean, it's just like, you know, they get into the Washington and they forget. You know, we don't.
Yeah,
have
just a bit of a caution, Albert.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to know how that will work out, have you ever? And I don't know if you do. I don't. Mm-hmm. But every now and then, I'll get up in the morning and I'll see an entire internet full of outrage over how some reality show ended and how the most worthy person got booted off in favor of somebody with two left feet. Okay?
Yeah.
Because of the will of the majority. If you want to know how, and I'm sorry, I'm being a nattering nabob of negativity and I know it, but if you want to know how which you're describing would work out is, once you factor in Citizens United and everything, the wrong person would always be kept on the island. And the nice, useful person who's been great for the team would be sent out to swim with the sharks. That's that. Because you know, there's a reason that these right-wingers, for instance, are constantly, and this is their new tactic, Krispy Kreme Christie in New Jersey is notorious for this. Well, I think homosexual rights should be put, yeah, I think your homosexual rights need to be put on the ballot for everybody to vote for. Okay? And if you don't like it, F you. See, I didn't turn him into a redneck. Aren't you proud?
Yeah.
And because he knows that bigotry is the default position in this country. And it is the default position in this country because this country is controlled by people like Brian Fisher from the American Family Association and Matt Barber and James Dobson. All they've got to do is whip the faithful into a frenzy, and boom, everything goes sideways. You know, that lesson is still with me from Ken Burns' Prohibition documentary about, you know, you don't need a majority. You just need enough to make You just, all you need is enough of a percentage to sway the outcome.
True. But don't we have more people? I mean, when we have...
I don't know. I don't know. I honestly don't know the answer to that question, Albert. Sometimes I think so, sometimes I think not.
I know. I mean, I try to venture out my bubble as much as I can, and I try to go into neutral places, and I do discussions, and I often find the overwhelming responses from the most intelligent individuals, they're always liberals. I mean, we're like firemen out here. We're the ones that are sitting here, you know, anytime any of these anarcho-Randians are coming out, you know, look at Reddit. Yeah, they have these moments, but the people that go in there and just eviscerate them, that's one of my favorite words, they eviscerate these people. It's like it's damage control. It's going in there and saying, no, you are completely incorrect, and this is why. Line by line by line by line. And yeah, I know there's an attention span. I know everyone's caring about Snooki and Snooki this and that. It's just because they like to hate. That's just because they like to, you know, gossip and feel better about themselves because, the mother of the octuplets and this. And
oh, the Duggard woman?
Yeah, I mean...
Oh, no, the Octomom. I'm sorry, she's a different one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but, you know, and you can go to all kinds of, you know, and I would even venture, you know, a place like the Huffington Post. You know, it's definitely got the left-wing, you know, dominant there. But, you know, those right-wingers come in, and my goodness gracious, it's like the liberals just eat them up like piranhas and eating up goldfish. They don't stand a chance. And if anything that you sit there and you look at their information or you look at the things they produce on the Internet, they don't even know the Internet. The Internet, I think, is mostly liberal. It's a liberal place. It's a place where free ideas, just by its definition, it causes free thinking. Even if you're looking at reptilians and aliens and, oh, this and this and that, you know, it's just the fact that your brain's out there and doing the exercise. Like that lady, she pulls into the parking space, she just needed to practice, Brother Bob. That's what she needs in her life. The goddess of irony directed her to the, you are an idiot, you're gonna need some practice on how to do some thinking. And it's just, you know, I'm going to take all exercise as good exercise. I mean, I'm going to sit here and take any kind of discussion as an opportunity to not only maybe change this person's mind, to not only give them a completely unmovable object of fact and reason, love and compassion. I mean, the things that I stand for are the things that they shall not pass. I mean, I'm not trying to be corny, but they shall not pass. I don't let it happen. You know, and I'm not the only one. There's people out there just like that. You go look at it. It's all over the place. So, you know, the Internet is a kind of place where, yeah, apathy can grow, and yeah, you know, you can waste your time, and yeah, you're doing porn, and da-da-da-da-da, but every now and then, the whole...
Now, wasting time and porn are not in the same category, Albert. I mean, let's be clear.
but at the same time, the whole idea of the Internet, the whole fact, it's just there's more knowledge there than you could even shake a stick at. These people drowned. They drowned. They are not the majority.
And they're just sort of bobbing along, all bloaty and drowny in the internet sea. Is that it? I mean, and they just bump up against something every now and then, and they holler, "States' rights! Protect the unborn!"
Yeah, there's an earthquake. It cracks open. One of them slithers out from the limestone that building on their head and the sediment. Oh, and they come out, and the fish eat it like it's like they're coral. And they're just in a feeding frenzy of coral polyps. You know what I mean? I mean, they're out there. Sure, they're out there. But there's more of us. There's more of us in this nation. There's more of us on this planet. You know, and it's time that we start standing up and kind of making avenues for us to let us know what, you know, how things should go. Look at, you know, online polls. Yeah, they can be fake. Sure, they can be fake. Yeah, that happens. But this stuff's getting bad. Hey, my PayPal account could get hacked. All these things can happen. But they can also be, you know, minimized and mitigated. You know, voter fraud is another one. That's it's like a boogeyman. It doesn't exist. You know, I mean, yeah, I understand. You know, how many people have gotten their accounts swiped? You know, if you're silly with these things, you know, I do my taxes online. I buy this online. I help you online. I do this online. I do everything online. The online is the next frontier in terms of, you know, in terms of our civilization. It's going to be secure. It's pretty dang secure in a lot of ways, and I know it's also pretty vulnerable in a lot of ways. But, you know, come on. I mean, I've never lost a single penny from anything. And maybe that's just because I'm lucky, maybe because I'm one of them coral polyps floating around and they didn't get me. But it doesn't, come on, you know? I mean, you, think of the damage it could do. It's like saying, you know, the same thing when they talk about legalizing cannabis. Oh, what about all the people smoking pot and driving? Where are the accidents? Where are the cops crying about that they can't? Oh,
well, yeah, that goes back to an old Robin Williams gag about getting pulled over, stoned, and yeah, you're kind of driving a little slow there, Mr. Williams. What are you, on the way to the dentist?
Yeah. yeah, I am, and I got a bad eye ache, and I'm just trying to take it easy. All right, you have a good day. I got pink eye, I can't see. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like, you're going to pass the sobriety test. You're not going to get into ag. It doesn't happen. All the studies, they show that these things, you know, so don't let these fears and, you know, irrational ways kind of hedge us and keep us in this pen. You know, it's time for us to open the pen. We can go back into the pen. We still have the pen. The pen, we're not selling the pen. But we're expanding it. We're going to, you know, we're going to drop our manure drippings and we're going to let grass grow. We're going to do, we have to. This is progress. I mean, how else are we going to get people's voices to be heard? A lot of people don't.
How else are we going to build the bullet train that runs from Greenville, that runs from Columbia, South Carolina to Montgomery, Alabama?
Yeah. What, you know, I mean, that's the other thing. People don't know things. You know, like what percentage of the budget is NASA? Oh, it's a sixth of a penny. Do you think maybe we should give them a penny? Just a full penny? I'd give NASA a full penny. Look at what they're doing with a sixth of a penny. Give them six times more. Goodness gracious. We need to be out there. We do. That's the ocean. That's the next ocean. That's, I mean, you know, I don't want to, I'm trying not to say next frontier, but God damn it.
It's almost impossible, isn't it?
It is.
I want to give these, and I say this advice, you know, under advisement, I want to give these heroic frontier pressing up from their own bootstraps, rising tide lifts all boat Republican right-wing types something to dream about and somewhere to go, preferably an all carbon dioxide atmosphere that they can then change to an oxygen atmosphere. You know?
Man, they're not going to do that without plants. Oh, no. They cut all the trees. And they're poisoning the algae. They're killing it. You know, and this is the thing that, I don't know, you know, I guess I look at life, we're in this for the long haul. You know, I don't want to leave my kids. You know, everyone knows this. You know, about everyone here, nobody wants to leave their kids and their grandkids. They want their grandchildren and grandkids. You know, they want to talk about 2,000 years ago, how dumb we were. That's what I want. I want people to still be here and to say, man, they were stupid. Thank goodness they kind of started coming
around.
Yeah, see,
around. I'm engaged in a little bit of a vanity or a hubris. For some reason or other, Albert, back when I started taking this this pill for my elevated blood sugar, which is working very nicely, I might add, and is on the $5 formulary at most drugstores, so that makes me very happy.
Excellent.
I guess I'm less free because there's a $5 formulary, but I'll try to get over it. But I just, you know, because you're supposed to keep a record of what your blood sugar is day to day, to check it twice a day, yada, yada, yada. Well, I decided I would not only do that, but I would make it worthwhile, so I would keep those numbers in conjunction with just making a few remarks every day in a journal. And I got a couple of weeks into the journaling, and I thought, you know, who am I writing this for? And then I realized, I knew all along. I'm not writing it for my kids to read later. I'm not even necessarily writing it for my grandkids, some born, some unborn, to read later. I love, you know, you're talking about all that wonderful stuff that's out there on the internet. I simply adore to get on the internet and read ancient stuff. Dr. John and I shared an exchange a few weeks back in which I recommended to him the poetry of Nezahualcoyotl, the philosopher king of Texcoco.
Just real quick, if I may, imagine trying to get your hands on that before the internet.
Yeah, right. That ain't happening.
No.
But, you know, it's there. And, you know, Marcus Aurelius, and reading him and
mm-hmm.
And even though he was a conservative patrician, 1% preserving piece of shit, the letters between Atticus between Cicero and Atticus, you know, those were preserved, and somehow or another they came down through the centuries to us, And I don't read them because I want to know what his politics were. I read them because they contain little nuggets of what his world was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I realized, not that I'm Cicero or Atticus or Nezahualcoyotl or Marcus Aurelius, because my journaling is more like broke my effing finger today, you know, that kind of stuff. Won't go to doctor because we do not have health care.
Because I'm free.
Yeah. I'm just crazy enough to think that somehow or another, maybe somebody from it's very difficult to transmit knowledge from one generation to the next, especially when it's in hard copy. But I would love, I'm never going to be a mummy or anything, and I sure don't want anybody staring at me in a museum.
Mm-hmm. But Brother Bob, they will listen. This conversation will be heard in 10,000 years.
I hope so. I sincerely hope so.
Yeah, it's there forever.
It's there for as long as the server bill gets paid.
Well, true. But, you know, we've got copies.
And I sit up nights worrying about these things. why I did it, because it matters. You know, I want them to. We've got some ledgers from a store that a family member ran about 110 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and they're just bare bones stuff. It's just like the old clay tablets from ancient Sumer. It's, you know, bag of rice, bag of beans, and how much things were back in the day.
You know, back in the day when we paid in a silver dime like Ron Paul wants us to.
You see credit accounts and you see payments being made. And I, the first time I saw those as a kid, I just sat there for hours reading every blessed line. And I still go back to them and I look at them because those are reflections of real living human beings that sweated it out every blessed day and had a hell of a lot harder time than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? They were more free, too, because they didn't have any of that damned health insurance to worry about. And if they got the cancer, they took the cancer, and they just went and died like Jesus wanted them to. Didn't run around trying to get cured.
Yeah, they followed the call.
So, that you know, I admit, I'm just a weirdo, Albert.
Yeah. Well,
but you know what?
Weirdos.
It beats the dickens out of being normal.
True. Well, exactly. Weirdos have a way of surviving. So.
And you know, and I get to console myself with that line from Forrest Gump. You know, at least I ain't led no humdrum life. I mean, I'm not scaling the Himalayas in Nepal. I'm not sifting among the ruins of Ashurbanipal.
By
the way, do you know? And I have to share this with you because you're going to love it so much. Do you know the name of the language that Joseph Smith claimed he translated by looking through his hat with seeing stones at golden tablets? Do you know what the golden tablets were written in?
Oh, no, I don't know. I'm sitting down.
Yeah, strap in. The strap in advice is probably better for Dr. John, but yes, the golden plates were written in Reformed Egyptian.
I'm a believer. Oh, did they? Were they?
Yeah, they, really, Reformed Egyptian. Even though there's no such language. And the plates that were written in Reformed Egyptian told the story of about how Jesus came flying across the ocean after he'd done been murdered and stopped and paid a visit to the Nephites or the Lamanites or the Morons or, you know, whoever the hell it was.
Wasn't it Iroquois? The Aztecs or somebody.
Yeah, right. It's Reformed Egyptian.
Reformed Egyptian.
I guess that only came after unrepentant Egyptian.
King James edition. King James Egyptian. There we go.
I recommend Mark Twain on Mormons to anybody who wants to. I mean, Mark Twain despised a lot of evil.
Yes.
But he saved the real brilliance of his pen for Mormons.
Yeah, he's the Matt Stone and Trey Parker.
Oh, would yeah, they can't touch him.
No, I mean he's that's he's yeah. Those are ours, you know what I mean? They're the ones that are, you know, of course not. They speak crazy back then, you know how it is.
Yeah,
today we're
blue,
we're that blend of hillbilly and ghetto slang and grunts and stuff now, you know what I mean?
Oh, jeez.
You know?
Yeah, I know. Albert, this has been a magnificent conversation. Thank you, brother.
Always, brother.
You all, yeah, you make my evening. Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Grunts and stuff. Hey, welcome to the program. Okie dokie. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening. How are you?
Hey, what's happening, Jim?
Well, first, a belated anniversary greeting to you and your spouse.
Well, thank you very kindly. We had a quiet but enjoyable day. I think we're really going to tear the roof off the sucker next year when it's 20. I looked at her across the luncheon table and said, you know, honey, we're old enough to vote and we're almost old enough to drink. God help us when we've been married 21 years.
Well, I certainly hope you get to enjoy that particular case.
I do, too.
You know, you were referring to the Sumerians and Ashurbanipal and Sennacherib, and I don't know, it came to mind this excerpt from The Exorcist, which I thought was incredible. I've always thought it was incredible. When the archaeologist was thinking about Nineveh, and he wrote, or William Peter Blatty wrote, "And here once stood 100-gated Nineveh, feared nest of the Assyrian hordes, now sprawled in the red dust of its own predilection." And from that particular passage, I began to think about other things that will be sprawled in the red dust of their own predilection.
Well, that takes me immediately. Was it Shelley who wrote Ozymandias?
He was.
Look upon me, ye mighty, and despair.
It was he, referring to the statues of Memnon.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But, you know, going back to the first part of your program, you know, history is written by the people who win it. History is written by the victors, not the vanquished. And of course, as you well know, victory has 1,000 fathers. Defeat is an orphan.
Precisely.
So, you know, there it is and there you have it. And as far as the particular gay thing is concerned, I would recommend highly to your audience that they see the film Latter Days.
Yeah, you sent an email about that, and I hadn't gotten around to it.
I mentioned it on this program before.
Yeah. Is that easily obtainable?
I don't know. I have a copy of it, but, I mean, you know, I saw it on Logo. And basically, it's the story of a young Mormon missionary who is sent to Los Angeles with his co-Mormons, and he realizes his own sexuality, and, of course, he's sent back to his home in Pocatello, wherever that is, I guess.
Idaho.
Yeah. And so from that point forward, he's disowned and excommunicated from his
shunned
in church, and then he attempts to, because of the disgrace, he attempts suicide, and because of that, he is sent to a sexual aversion therapy center where they put him in tubs of ice and stuff like that and make him scrub floors with toothbrushes. And he finally, with scarred wrist, escapes back to a friend he had met in Los Angeles, and he is accepted among more tolerant people. I would just leave it at that. And, you know,
there's got to be a special place in hell reserved for the people who torture a human being that way. Don't you think?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how it's structured. Dante gives us a good idea, but nonetheless, you know, going as far as the gay thing is concerned, you don't know what it's really like to be gay unless you are gay.
Precisely.
And, you know, you and Albert are among great minorities because, or great majorities, excuse me, because you're both straight, white men.
Shining with privilege, absolutely, and I acknowledge that.
Yeah, you are, but you will never know what it's like to fight the prejudice and to have to deal with the situations that arise from day to day when people begin to wonder, well, why aren't you married, or why don't you have children, or this, that, and the other, and, you know, why do you do this, and why do you do that?
And they concoct strange phrases like, well, he's a confirmed bachelor.
No, it's gone beyond that. That's the Southern thing, and basically even that's going away now. People are becoming more and more, well, I would think with the rise of people like Fred Phelps and the stuff you've been talking about with Romney and the Republicans, they're becoming extremely...
Well, they boasted about destroying a man's livelihood.
Excuse me?
There was that Brian Fisher creep boasting about destroying a man's livelihood. Now, these Republicans have been all about job creation, right? The job creators, blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, this guy was a high-ranking member of the Romney team. He was being paid for his work, and they destroyed his ability to make a living.
Let me tell you something, Bob. I know exactly what it's like to be prosecuted and persecuted because PTA doesn't approve the way you do your thing, okay? Because I've seen it happen to a lot of people whose jobs were taken away, whose security clearances were revoked, and who were the subject of witch hunts. I don't know what it's like to have to avoid and to just wonder when you go to work every day if someone hasn't, you know, found out something or this, that, and the other. I know from personal experience. You understand me?
I do understand you.
And you'll never be able to understand unless you are gay.
No, and the thing is, what other people can do is to try to exhibit a little bit of common human, without regard to sexuality, common human compassion.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, if people were of a correct mindset, we wouldn't even have to use the word compassion. It would basically default to live and let live.
Yes. It's not that hard. Most of us most of our parents told us that an essential part of being a member of any civilized society is learning how to mind one's own business.
Well, I would think so. I mean, you know, as far as I'm concerned, minding my own business and taking care of my own affairs is a 24/7 operation, and I don't have time to worry about who sleeps with whom and who does what and what Snooki does or what some crazy idiot woman does in the tanning bed. You know, that's just the most ridiculous thing in the world I've ever seen. And by the way, when I saw her picture on Ibis this morning, I will guarantee you one thing, she certainly couldn't pass the paper bag test to get into the Harlem Club and to the Cotton Club in Harlem in the 30s. That's for damn sure.
No, and you know, that's another one of those anachronisms. You know, white people out there trying to be less white while celebrating their whiteness, of course.
Well, I don't understand that either because, I mean, of course, I had my days in the sun and had tan, stuff like that, because it makes you look more vibrant and healthy and this, that, and the other. But you get to the point where you get into a tanning booth and expose yourself to various classes of melanoma and all types of horrible things. And, you know, it's just nuts. I mean, I don't know if it's an urban legend or not, but I know of one woman who was or heard of and saw on TV, I mean, for take what it's worth, who was going to be a bridesmaid in top of the life of a wedding, and she went to 5 different tanning beds in one day attempting to get the right color. It killed her.
Yeah. Look at John Boehner.
I mean, you know, it killed her. I mean, she literally, I think, died before the wedding was over. But, I mean, you know, it's just amazing the attentions that people are paying to certain problems. And I wish they would simply live and let other people be themselves and, you know.
And see, it's maddening. It makes your mind feel like it's broken or something when you run across the Brian Fishers and the Matt Barbers and the James Dobsons of the world. And you understand, you know, it's not, listen, if these people talk like this inside their churches or whatever, they have an absolute and uncontrovertible, uncontestable right to do so. But they have taken it to the point now where it is not enough for them to believe this way. It is not enough for them, Jim, to live in a world that is consumed by hatred. They wish to enforce that upon the rest of us and make their twisted vision of religion our national policy. And that's where people have to speak up.
Well, of course, but, you know, it's like it's been said before. You have the right to say what you want to say, and I have the right to shoot you for saying it.
Well, they certainly believe that.
Well, I definitely think that's the understatement of the
point. That's the world they want to live in.
I mean, that's, you know,
I mean, that's stand your ground laws.
Well,
I don't know if you saw it earlier today, but in the Trayvon Martin case, I guess some digging around was done in Mr. Zimmerman's MySpace page, and he's got a lot of nasty things to say about people of different ethnicities. And in a very veiled way, his defense counsel put out a statement saying, you better stop that, or we're going to slime Trayvon Martin up one wall and down the other.
Well, I've seen Zimmerman's photograph on TV, and I don't think he would pass Himmler's test to get into the SS, do you?
No. Well, his mother's Peruvian, and his daddy's white folks.
Well, I don't think he quite qualified. Do you?
No, but apparently he very much white. Yeah. He identified as white.
Well, still don't think he would make it into.
Oh, know, no. He can't pass the blonde haired blue eyed test. No way.
And who is he to pass judgment on the ethnicity of anybody?
But who is he indeed? But the state of Florida said he had an absolute right to do so, and to do so with a handgun.
And did so. And the result is a dead 17-year-old teenager whose only crime was to be at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah. His crime was thinking he was just free enough in Florida to go for a walk to get some Skittles and a can of iced tea.
Yeah, we've talked about all this before, and it's well known. But anyway, not to wax too much on people like Fred Zimmerman and people like that, but I just see a great divide in this country coming. And, you know, I just don't see the emergence of any, how can I say it, of any degree of a great awakening of tolerance and understanding. I see it going the other way.
And you know, I think there's a natural progression,
you know,
in that, Jim. And
we're more polarized now than we have ever been in my lifetime. I mean, we are more polarized than ever. And there is so much hatred. There is so much.
But that's not a reason not to go forward with further attempts at equality, further attempts to broaden the net of constitutional rights.
Well, in those attempts, I really do, because I've seen so many. I mean, I've seen a lot of progress in my own lifetime. From, for example, with gay people, from Stonewall in 1969. Coming through the sexual revolution of the 70s and 80s. And then I also saw the intolerance and lack of compassion for people with AIDS and things of that nature, and how it was.
And again, who were the principal purveyors of that intolerance and that hatred?
Oh, you had Jerry Falwell, and you had Pat Robertson probably, and God only knows how many other of those people who are just, as far as I'm concerned, anathema. And from my church, they are excommunicate. And, you know.
And that would be the Church of Jim, right?
There was something funny about this, because I had friends who died with this.
Yeah.
My own life was changed by it. You know, on this program, I have never decried religion in any form, and you know that. You and I have had problems about that. And we won't.
I understand it.
However, you know, I've had my share of time in the sun. I've had my share of good times, frantic tumbles, shy goodbyes, and relationships. And I've seen them go by the board. I've seen them lost. And I've not been able to express the way you could or Albert could about a loss in your situation.
No.
So I want people to be ever, ever mindful of that. I mean, it's one thing to be sympathetic. It's another thing to be a victim.
It absolutely is.
And I can tell you one thing right now. I served my country.
Yes, you did.
And I've over my bed, I have a wall full of things that are signed from major generals on to senior civil servants to the Department of Defense Secretary. And I did so under a sword of Damocles. But it never prevented me from being ready on call in spite of that difficulty, knowing fully well that those people out there would devour me the way a lame fish would be swimming in a school of barracuda. You know, I call it loss of symmetry, because when fish swim in a school like that, particularly in barracuda or even piranhas, loss of symmetry is the death knell. That's when the other fish will sink in and just devour you, and you're lost forever. So I've lived many lives in my life, Bob, many lifetimes in my life, and I appreciate the good words and the conversation about tolerance and openness and humanity. But you'll never know what it's like until you walk a mile in my shoes. And I want to underscore that.
And that, for all intents and purposes, is impossible.
It absolutely is. And, you know, for all your good intentions, and I appreciate the good intentions, as I said before, but you will never know what it's like. I mean, I want to ask you a question. What would you do if your own son came to tell you, Dad, I'm gay?
Tell him I love him.
Okay, that's good. A lot of people couldn't do that. But how would it make you feel?
It wouldn't change how I love him.
Well, it would certainly probably change how you feel about his prospects of being happy in life would be.
Okay, yeah. In that regard, I would be, there would be fear.
Absolutely.
Because I would know that this is a world made more brutal by the same type of people that we, you know, whose words we put forth on this program earlier this evening.
But unfortunately, my friend, you're in the minority. And the majority seems to have a way of, like stupidity, have a habit of getting its way.
And the majority only really gets the bit in its teeth when people are silent, Jim. When people, you know, it is an old saying, and perhaps some deem it trite, but I hold it true, that the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing.
Well, unfortunately, as history dictates, and as we read everything from Marcus Aurelius through the history of many governments that have taken power and, of course, found their way into the dustbin of history.
You know, from Socrates to Julius Caesar to Jesus Christ to Gandhi to Dr. King. You know, when people say there's a better way, Jim, they are frequently condemned for it.
Yeah, they are. I mean, Christ was condemned for it. For what he taught, because what he taught was basically the way of the words in red, as was referenced earlier in this program, was to love your neighbor and to do what's right and to do the right thing, among other theological.
And you know, if you'll focus on that, it's amazing how many of the other perceived problems will sort themselves out.
Well.
But you see, from that story about the 5-year-old that was really a 10-year-old earlier, you know, the guy acknowledged to John Stewart that, yes, Christians feel persecuted in this country, But while they feel persecuted, there and this is the hubristic tragic irony of it. They're the ones doing the persecuting. You know, I don't know if you followed it or not, but there's been a great big nasty uproar for the last week about Dan Savage and some remarks to some high school journalists.
Yeah, I've seen Dan Savage. I've seen him on RuPaul's Drag thing.
Okay, so are you familiar with this latest kerfuffle?
No, but I know Dan Savage well.
Okay, so he's addressing these high school journalists, and he's talking about hate. And he says, you know, there's and he speaks, if you're familiar with his work, you know he speaks bluntly and often humorously. And Dan Savage said to this assembled group, there's a lot of BS in the Bible that we've gotten past. We got past, and he used the word bullshit. He said, we got past the bullshit in the Bible about slavery being okay. We got past the bullshit in the Bible about not eating shrimp. We got past the bullshit in the Bible about not wearing wool and cotton blended together. Well, we can also get past the bullshit in the Bible about homosexuality being evil. And at this point in time, a whole bunch of little fundy kids got up and walked out. And later on he said, you can tell those little pansy asses out there that we're done talking about the Bible and they can come back in. And now, of course, Dan Savage is persecuting the Christians. Well, Dan Savage wouldn't have a damn word to say, Jim, if it weren't for the fact that the right wing is out there doing that and far worse every minute of every day. And so what he did is he pushed back a little bit, but they really are. They can dish it out. They're bullies. They can, you know, the best way to stop bullying, and I hate to say this as a person who espouses nonviolence, is to put one's face through the nose of the bully, and then the bully stops being a bully, and that's what Dan Savage did.
Right. You're telling me this? I know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And I've, you know, on this program, I have never, ever attempted to disclose anything about my life, period. You know that, and...
Well, come on, Jim. You've told some damn fine stories, okay? I mean, you have.
Well, of course, I guess I have. And, you know, I thought them humorous, and if I didn't think them humorous, I wouldn't have shared them with you.
And they were.
And, you know, I tried to, I guess, in the midst of a lot of conflict, maintain an element of symmetry, which is my sense of humor, and also my sense of history. And that's the reason I've constantly gone back on this program to things like the regimes of Adolf Hitler and Joseph Stalin.
Well, perspective, you know, you noted, you know, the that America is more polarized now than it ever has been in all your life. And I don't differ with you.
Hear me out on this. We are almost at the stage right now of where Weimar Germany was in 1919. It's coming to that.
I do not disagree.
And what I fear the most, and the reason I've been called a Nazi because I talk about these things, is not because I'm a believer in what Adolf Hitler did. I mean, you know, I find him interesting. I find the period interesting. And I find it frightening. And I find it a lesson in history that we are not learning very well. I mean, you know, you have these people who stage these magnificent spectacles and this, that, and the other, and who posture and this, that, and the other, who fret and force their way about the stage. And they have a way of taking a decent and honorable piece of humanity, the way Germany and other nations have been taken, into the absolute depths of destruction. And I really see with the economic conditions even the racial divide in this country, I don't think that there's a great deal more tolerance racially than there was back in the 60s. I think it's still very much alive. Intolerance is.
I think the intolerance is very much alive, but by the same token, I think that it is becoming a more barbarous howl, because I prefer to be a little bit optimistic, sort of like Brother Albert on this. I think those howls are the last death squeals of a generation passing away.
I hope you're right. Like I told you before, Khrushchev once said, there are only certain mistakes that are corrected, and that's by the grave.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, I've also stated this. for the record. But I've also been a desolationist, too.
And you know what? Sometimes it's hard to avoid that.
Well, you're 47.
Nine.
Well, 47, 48, 49. I mean, you know, hey, what's 2 years among people who've gone back, who go back as long as we do?
Yeah. Who's counting?
Right, who's counting? And, you know, it just seems like stupidity has a habit of getting its way. And that's just been the cyclical, historical element.
But to a certain extent, Jim, I think we are, our point of view is to a certain extent shaded by our place in both time and space. I read an article the other day that News Ninja Gene sent me. It was someone commenting about the way religion finds its way into our political debates. And it pointed out that in most of the rest of the so-called civilized world, the way that presidential campaigns and generally politics are conducted in this country might as well be coming from another planet.
Yeah, really. I mean, they're going to the point that, you know, it's not a matter of...
And so, it, you know, it's our place. You know, we look down our noses at Iran and call it a theocracy. But, how much business do we have doing that when it is impossible? It would be physically impossible for a person to run for president and not periodically bow and scrape and bend a knee of fealty to some sort of divine.
Well, the thing about it is, and Mr. Ahmadinejad has come out openly saying there was a such thing as the Holocaust, and it was all contrived and made up.
Yeah, he's a loon.
And, of course, that loon is the president of Iran, and that loon has the power of life and death over a very large nation among a very large number of people.
But a group of imams has the power of life and death over him. His powers are greatly diminished as a result of the last election.
Well, you know how it is among the clerics when they come into politics, how they will definitely defer to the secular in order not to be hauled out in the middle of the night at 4 o'clock into, well, I guess their version of the Lubyanka or the Lefortovo prisons of Moscow, Stalin's Russia. And that's precisely what Ahmadinejad represents to me. Now, it might not represent that to you, but that's what he represents to me.
It's actually upside down, because the last elections in Iran were a great big affirmation of the clerics. They have the power now. Most any Iran expert would tell you, they have the power now to have Ahmadinejad dragged out in the middle of the night and taken out in the desert and dealt with. And he knows it.
Well, apparently he must have their acquiescence in what he's saying, or he wouldn't be saying it. That is in fact true. So, I mean, you know, QED. But nonetheless, there it is, and there you have it. And
well, you did mention, Jim, and I just have to share this with you because it happens here in our home state. You know, I guess it was last week that we had the story of John Racy saying that not being able to smoke in his buildings in Morgantown was just like having to wear a yellow Star of David sewn on his clothing. I don't know if you saw that or not, but yeah, he did.
Oh, we talked about that, and I told you the man was an absolute idiot.
Right. Well, yeah. He's doubled down. I've got the story here somewhere, but Fritz sent it to me. And you know, the mark of an enlightened person is that having made one mistake, you try not to repeat the same. Right.
Agreed.
Fritz sent me this story, and at first, to be fair, I thought Fritz had sent me the same story we had the previous week. It wasn't the same story, Jim. He did it again. I tweeted it or whatever, and the fact of the matter is, you know, Joe Manchin is never going to impress anybody with his big brain.
Agree.
And if he had an opponent with an IQ, the temperature of water left outside on a winter's day, he would be dead in the water. But no, it turns out the story that Fritz sent me was not the same story you and I discussed. Apparently, John, and the sad thing is, and this goes back to what you said about stupid getting its way.
Yes.
Well, John Racy is trailing like 72-22% in polls against Joe Manchin. And there's a reason he's talking about all of this stuff. And it's because he hopes to bring out an electorate in this state that is unavoidably, undeniably racist and has more than a little stripe, a little pinstripe of fascism to it. He was talking at an event on this past Saturday about President Obama. And you know there's been a few things here and there about child labor bills where various and sundry right-wing legislatures in this country want to overturn the child labor laws.
I've heard about this, yes, about children working on farms and things like that.
Yeah, and he said, Barack wants to stop all children from working on the farm. Can you imagine this? I can't fathom that. Did you ever think we'd grow up in an America to see something like that? Let me take it one step further. He wants to disallow the 4-H from training children to work on a farm. Yavol.
That's what I'm saying. You know, politics in this country now used to be a reasonably, how can I say this delicately and with accuracy? Well, I will say this. It did not used to be the blood sport that it has become now. And when any type of contest becomes a blood sport, it's generally the bully who wins. And these people will do anything they possibly can, bring any particular issue to light and, you know, pervert it in their own way. I mean, John Racy compared his not being able to blaze up to being taken into Auschwitz-Birkenau. That's exactly what he did, which is absolutely fatuous and, you know, absolutely...
Well, it's hateful.
Well, it's not only hateful, it's just stupid. I mean, that's what I'm saying. You know, you have this country being occupied by stories like that, political stories like that, and the president being the man who can't do anything right, basically because in their heart of hearts, they don't like the guy because he's not white. And you have so many other prejudices that are being brought to play or into play that, well, in my humble opinion, and I hope I'm definitely wrong, and I hope you are right, but I have my reservations from what I've been through.
And I don't think you are wrong to have those reservations. But
no, because of living, Bob, I know what it's like.
But if you poll teenagers and 20-somethings, the results you get are wildly different on issues related to both homosexuality and race than they are if you poll the 60-somethings.
I do hope that there is a measurable outcome in a positive way. But it would appear to me as though a lot of these right-wing people, these fascists and people who do not have the best interest of humanity at heart, that they're trying to push back to the point that they can erase any measurable gains that have been made. They don't like those gains. They don't like the idea of...
No, they want to stand in the surf and tell the tide not to come in, Jim.
Yeah, they're standing their ground, and what they're trying to do is not only stand their ground, they're trying to take whatever ground that has been gained, whatever territories that had been conquered in the name of tolerance and willing to live and let live. That's what, in my opinion, they're trying to do. And they're very subtle in their ways that they do it, and some people aren't as subtle. But they have a lot of money and a lot of power behind them. And it's very frightening. And they have begun to really, in my opinion, erode whatever progress that may have been made in the past 40 years. And we talked about this before, too. Every element from racial toleration to entitlement programs to health care to everything that's been achieved that's been good and shining, they are in their own way trying to take it back for themselves. And I don't know what they're going to do with it when they get it.
Well, then they will. I mean, if that ever came true, Jim, what you would then see would be religious wars in this country, a bloodletting. Because then they would have to get down to the dirty business of fighting over whose version of salvation was the correct one. And you see, that's the reason that the people who prevailed upon the Constitutional Convention to agree to pass the Bill of Rights subject to the Constitution being ratified, that's part of the reason they did it, was because they, you know, there was a history that was not as far back as the Civil War is to us, of countries rending themselves in twain.
Oh, no. I mean, Bob, look at the French Revolution when it first started. And look at what happened to Robespierre. At first, he was against the death penalty. He was a proponent of the Declaration of the Rights of Man. And look what Robespierre became.
Yeah. These were largely English-based colonies, and they didn't have to look outside the shores of the Sceptred Isle to see what happens when you have internecine strife over whether or not transubstantiation obtains or consubstantiation. People were slaughtered in their thousands over that.
I know.
And so consequently, they established a separation whereby the government would not be an endorser of religion. But, you know, this people like this this jackass on John Stewart's program, he wants an America in which government endorses religion, and then they get to fight it out over which religion gets endorsed.
Did they ever decide what the young man was praying for? Was he just saying his blessing, thanking God for his food?
He wasn't praying at all. He wasn't a 5-year-old.
What was he doing?
He was a 10-year-old who was engaged in fighting in the cafeteria.
Oh, I see.
The whole thing was made up.
Contrived.
It was a lie.
Oh, there it is. Well, you know how it is, and I'll get off here after repeating what I've said about Dr. Goebbels and the big lie. And, you know, that's the thing. You don't tell little lies. You tell those big ones.
Right. And this is, you know, this is a classic case in point of how right-wing lies get spread. It starts out before 2009 in a book by David Limbaugh. It gets picked up by Ann Coulter. And 3 years later, it's being repeated as gospel truth on The Daily Show to Jon Stewart.
Well, it doesn't bode well, does it?
It has to be fought back against. It has to. There is a struggle, and there are no neutrals in this struggle. Jim, have a good evening, my friend.
Likewise.
Take care. Bye now. Our good friend Jim. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program. Okay, are you there? Hello. Yeah, that was definitely the sound of a connection. Maybe somebody went for a sandwich. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Hi. Vince.
Oh, hey, Vince. How are you? I got a little echo coming back at me.
Yeah, it's my phone. It's I'm still working on it.
Okay, no worries.
Is it too bad?
No. We'll get by.
All right. So how you been, dude?
I've been well. How about you? Well, no, not really. I've got a little Republican living in my gut. But apart from that, I'm okay. How about you?
I'm doing all right. Can we just, like, get Godwin's Law and apply it to, like, everything? It works well enough for internet discussions, but every time one of these idiots runs around and starts screaming about how, oh, my God, I can't smoke, it's like I'm being persecuted by Nazis, I just want to go, congratulations, you see the argument automatically.
See, but yeah, that would mean having to explain Godwin's Law to John Racy, and that's like explaining nuclear physics to...
A four-year-old?
To a Cro-Magnon four-year-old. I will now get letters in defense of Cro-Magnon man.
And I'm sure you will. it was interesting a couple of weeks back. Just to kind of give you an update, I'm up in Detroit, Michigan now, and guess who was right up the street from me not too long ago causing a ruckus again?
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm next door to Dearborn.
Yeah, so that was it, the Burn the Koran guy?
Yeah, Kerry Jones, and according to him, I'm now living under Sharia law.
Well, that sucks. I mean, have you been able to get any? I mean, I assume you can still buy hot dogs that have pork in them, right, Vince? I mean, or maybe, I mean, maybe not.
I didn't know, but apparently I'm pressed and just didn't know it.
Daggummit. Does that mean that, how's your lovely spouse feel about you taking on those extra wives?
Well, we haven't gotten around to that yet, actually.
Yeah, you know what? I'd hold off on that conversation till the Sharia law gets a little more roots under it.
But in all seriousness, you know, it's a city just like anything else. People just dress a little funnier. But come on, I work in Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, what's funny?
I don't know.
I mean, there's a lot more elegance in a robe than in a pair of skanky sweatpants and a T-shirt that says, "Fear this."
And never mind that those pants are down to their ankles and, you know, they've got their boxers up to their arms.
No. I'm speaking in, well, I'm talking about what you see when you wander into the local Wally World around here.
Well, yeah,
like
true.
The Friends of Coal lady who got out of her poorly, poorly parked automobile. Yeah. It's not like they get dressed up to go to Walmart.
I don't know. I don't know if we're going to the website, peopleofwalmart.com. There's some scary things there.
Oh, I go to peopleofwalmart.com about once a week.
I try to avoid it just because my wife used to work there, and she was very much not amused.
Oh, I'll bet. Yeah, I can more than understand it. But, you know, you're in Dearborn, so, you know, that's where Pam Geller had her Women of Islam conference that women of Islam weren't allowed to attend. Yeah, piece of work, her.
They're all a piece of work. Gangrene finally hung up his campaign about, 6 months too late.
Yeah, with a big thank you to Sheldon Adelson for, you know, for a casino mogul. That wasn't a good bet.
Nah. And it never looked like one. Who did he think he was kidding me? And did anybody really think he had a shot at this?
I don't know. Maybe he's paying off the Tiffany's bill or something.
I don't know. I just love though how it's perfectly okay for him to go however millions of dollars in debt he is right now. But oh my God, somebody doesn't pay their bills and well they ought to just go to a debtor prison or have their kids work the debt off being a janitor for a school or whatever the heck his bright idea.
Because that's the right wing definition of freedom, like Albert and I were talking about. I can go on having a god awful pain in my gut, or I can find $15,000 laying around somewhere and make the pain go away. And that's I've got the freedom to make that choice.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of like how, you know, I'm stuck in a dead-end job right now that, you know, if I'm lucky, I might be able to get promoted into something, but the reason I keep getting passed over is because I don't have a diploma that says I know what I know. Now, I could go ahead and I could drop, what's the going rate for a year of tuition right now? About $24,000 if you go to a community college?
Take,
I could
yeah, ain't cheap
to do that.
Yeah, you're free enough to make that choice. But you're equally free enough to continue working the dead-end job and be glad you've got one, American citizen. Yeah, you know, the funny thing is it doesn't feel that free. It's kind of like an email I got from our buddy Robert in Australia. He said, after the Port Arthur massacre in 1996 with 35 people killed and 21 wounded in Tasmania, the federal government did what governments should do and changed the gun ownership laws in Australia. And basically, you can't possess semi-automatic and pump-action shotguns, and they restricted the system of licensing and ownership, they came up with a whole process whereby guns were bought back and so forth. And with all of that having been done, Robert closes his email by saying, I still feel free and a lot safer.
I would just be happy if we could, you know, join the rest of the civilized nation and, you know, not have to worry about, you know, your gut all of a sudden deciding to go AWOL on you or my knees blowing up on me or attack or God knows what else. I mean,
but see,
you know.
But see, that the heroes of the right wing are willing to sacrifice their own freedom. That's why that incredibly brave and heroic daughter of Scott Brown, who, as a result of the Affordable Care Act, is being allowed to stay on her daddy's insurance. Well, she's sacrificing her freedom for us.
Yeah. Oh,
because that's what the 1% does. They sacrifice their freedom. We just don't understand. We're a bunch of ingrates, us 99%er proles. Yeah.
Let's just call it for what it is. It's just modern-day serfdom. That's all it is.
Surf's up.
Yeah.
Well, it's awful good to hear from you, Vince. Hopefully we will...
You got other blinkies?
Well, not other blinkies. I'm out of time.
Oh, you're completely out of time. My clocks must be behind. Well, I've got good internet now, and I've actually got myself into a place, so you'll be hearing from me more. Take it easy, man.
Well, I sure hope we will. Don't be such a stranger, Vince.
I try not to, but this is the first good internet I've had in close to 2 years. So.
I understand. Well, we actually think about you when folks disappear, so... You've stayed in our thoughts.
Well, I just wanted to check in and say I'm alive and well, and like I said, the Sharia law thing, apparently, I don't know what that's all about, but whatever.
Well, you know, you're there in the front line, so I'm sure you'll tell us the first time it gets tacked on your door or something. Take care, Vince.
Oh yeah. When the invasion starts, I'll let you all know.
Yeah, do please.
See you later, bud.
All right, later, Vince. Bye now.
Just another
free American. That's our buddy Vince, and good to hear from him after a long time away. It is a couple of minutes before the hour. It's time to get out of here. And I thank you all. I thank you for the kind contributions that came in. We got within $10. We got within $10 of meeting tonight's fundraising goal, and that's pretty impressive. Thank you very, very much. And thanks to all of you who contribute your time, your energy, your thoughts, your emails, your phone calls, your participation in the chat room, thank you. Your finite time is the most precious thing that you can share. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Our op-ed correspondent, Reverbo, is on assignment below the possum line and behind the cornbread curtain. Thanks to my head writer, David in Tennessee. Thanks to John Fox for all that he does, every last thing, from the website to the technical advice, and occasionally getting behind the microphone and serving as a darned fine host in his own right. Thank you, John. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Everything you hear is a function of the ongoing hard work, 10 years now, that the White Rose Society, WhiteRoseSociety.org, has been making sure that progressive, liberal, sane radio is available on the internet. There's a level of heroism there that most folks don't understand. Thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, stop the ache,
www.gmail.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Goodness gracious me, it's More End Monday on the Horn. The weekends do fly by, don't they? And good for me, because all those 2 days of sitting around not talking to anybody, well, I wind up talking to myself and listening to Hello Walls and all that kind of stuff, and it's not good for a fella. It's about 2 minutes past the hour. I got caught a little short and didn't hit the start button as quickly as I could because, well, honestly, when you read a phrase like the majority of rich people would rather douse their dicks with lighter fluid, strike a match, and dance around singing Disco Inferno than pay one more cent in taxes to Uncle Sugar. When you read something like that, it has a sort of transportive quality to it, and you don't realize that the clock is ticking away. I need to stop reading things right before the show and just commit to where I am. That, by the way, from a letter, or an essay, I suppose, over at the Daily Beast by Stephen King. Tax me for F's sake. Yeah, it's tremendous. Brother Albert sent that along just a few minutes before showtime. But it is Monday, and we have enough morons to fill a city bus, if not a train out of town. I kind of prefer the latter, but I don't think we could get them to. So, no, there's a lot to go into. I want to get to a little bit of mail that escaped me in the past couple of days. A lot to go into for this Moran Monday. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, the Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com, America's liberal voice. We are a listener-supported enterprise. It is through your kind contributions that things continue here. We are here at the last day of April, looking at not forcing our buddy Scott in Sweden to pony up on the Beat the Swede Challenge. He's been offering the Beat the Swede Challenge for 2 months now and hasn't had to make good on his promise yet. We find ourselves this evening at $610 short of the monthly fundraising goal that we set here. You can see it at the widget over at headonradionetwork.com on the main page. And many thanks to John Fox, of course, for putting that up there so that folks can see it easily and plainly. Speaking, program notes first. Was that they all are. We had a wonderful PRISM West Virginia chat with Dr. Bill on Saturday. You know, nothing has been the same when the right wing runs prattling around about our freedom and our democracy. It rings even more hollow than it did before after these last couple of years of being deeply immersed in the process of the constitutional ratification as I have been because of my association with Dr. Bill and the PRISM series. If you were listening on Saturday, you would have heard a discussion of the fact that delegates arrived to the Constitutional Convention, which was called, even the shenanigans that had to be engaged to get a Constitutional Convention were quite stunning in light of what the Articles of Confederation said about what it would take to change them. But you'll just have to go back and check out the archive for all that. But no, there is one thing worth mentioning, and one thing worth checking it out so that you can hear so that you can see over at the PRISM page. Just look up PRISM WV at ustream.tv and you'll see it. That one of the opening addresses or opening comments or opening remarks upon the beginning of the Constitutional Convention was the observation by one delegate, if I recall correctly, the observation by one delegate that democracy was breaking out all over and that they had come to Philadelphia to stop that. In other words, the Constitution of the United States is best understood as a document that was created to quell democratic urges, not enshrine them. And man, doesn't that say something. Says a lot. Thank you very much. Contribution just rolled in sufficient to lower our fundraising goal for this evening to $510. Thank you. Thank you very kindly. A program note, going forward, we will have a regular week up through Thursday. We will have shows Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this week. Friday, I go to Boston. Am I saying it right? Boston? No, I'm going to Boston on Friday, and I will be gone, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and then Monday evening we fly to Charlotte, and then Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday in Charlotte, and then Wednesday evening I fly back here to wild, wonderful, almost level West Virginia. So it's going to be a little bit busy. But there are, I'm going to be at two speaking engagements in Boston, Cambridge, and one in Sudbury. I hope I'm saying that correctly. I'm quite certain of it. One in Cambridge, one in Sudbury. And we will be talking about the horrors of mountaintop removal and the financing thereof. So if you can come out, I would love to have a chance to meet folks who are in the Boston area and in the Horn family. I got a note from our good buddy Patrick, who said he'll try to come to the Sudbury event. I think our chat room moderator, I'm going to get to finally meet our chat room moderator Lottie for the first time, which is going to be exciting. I think he's going to try to make it to the Cambridge event. Let's see here. Let me look around here and I'll tell you just exactly where in Sudbury and just exactly where in Cambridge on Saturday from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. A number of us will be speaking at Memorial Congregational Church. That's at 26 Concord Road in Sudbury, Massachusetts. There's a Facebook page. And then on Sunday, May the 6th, from 3 to 5 p.m., First Parish in Cambridge at 3 Church Street in Cambridge, Massachusetts, near the Harvard T-stop. And then Monday, we're going to be doing some Bank of America stuff. In Charlotte in particular, we will be going to the shareholder meeting of Bank of America. And there will also be a big rally and alternative summit in Charlotte at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, May the 8th. So you can see it's going to be rather of a busy time between Friday and Wednesday. But I think you'll learn a lot if you come out, if you're anywhere nearby. And you won't just learn a lot. I think you'll be energized to take steps forward. Yeah, Marty, I can dig that. I understand. Boston's a bit of a drive from Sacramento, and but you know what? We get anywhere near Sacramento, I know you'll be there. I just do. Don't know how much time there's going to be for sightseeing. There seldom is on these kind of trips, but I'm going to try to see a couple of the more noteworthies in Boston. I've been waiting since childhood to see that city. See, I was raised to think that the North was in the right, even though I was being raised in Alabama. It caused no small amount of friction. I'm not going to go into the story. You don't want to hear it. But I was absolutely fascinated when I read that the rednecks, you know, the ignorant, the dirt eaters and booger eaters and, you know, pro-slavery people. I was fascinated when I read that, because even a child's mind can understand you can't do this, that the Southerners had suggested, because that Massachusetts is such a hotbed of abolitionist insurrection trying to step on our property rights to own other people like it says we're supposed to in the Bible. Now, the dumbasses wanted to dig a ditch around Massachusetts and float it out to sea. You understand now why the South lost the Civil War. Right. But no, that's where we're headed, beginning Friday. And home on Wednesday, road trip, and I will be very kind to my innards during all of the above. Don't care about the George Clooney contest. Sorry. So where do we go this evening? It is, after all, you know it. I said it early on. No getting around it. Wait, too early. Too early. I'm getting ahead of myself. No, I wanted to make sure we hit some email. Oh, wow, thanks. Thanks very kindly. We are now $490 away from making April's fundraising goal. That's inspiring. Sure would be nice to make Scott pony up on the Beat the Swede challenge. We'll see. Stranger things have happened. Speaking of Scott, I have a letter from him here from Friday that I wanted to get to but didn't, and it deserves our attention because it is an underreported story here in the United States, and I want to do what little bit I can to reverse that trend.
You know, Anders Breivik, the right-wing ass who shot up a bunch of Norwegian children and murdered them, is on trial. Being Norway, he is not on trial for his life, but he will spend a great deal of time in prison, hopefully. Scott notes, he says, "Hey, Bob or Rebob." I kind of like that. "I hope you're feeling better now, and I have been a bit worried about you." I am feeling better about. I am feeling better now, and on Wednesday I'll find out about what it is that what it's going to cost me to get this little Republican removed from my gut. He says, "I have some news from Norway that I'm sure will lift all of our spirits. In my last letter, I pointed out how much of a fascist, in the technical sense, Anders Breivik is, and how he is sure he has won because he decapitated the ranks of Norwegian Social Democratic Party's young up-and-coming leaders. Although one thing Breivik never imagined was that youth would flock to all the political party's youth sections in protest and to get more involved in their own democracy and future. By cutting off the head of the Hydra, he now gets to watch new heads multiply." It is, after all, Moran Monday, so talking about even though he's homicidal, he is still a Moran, Anders Breivik, a Christian murderer, Anders Breivik. Anders Breivik has been a right smug bastard all through the trial, smirking and giving a modified Hitler salute. When the cameras are on him, as he enters for the day, he pounds his chest with his fist and then raises that fist in front of him. One of his many snarky comments was how Norwegian kids are indoctrinated by Marxism in the daycare centers where, since the 1970s, they've been forced to learn that the Pete Seeger song, they've been forced to learn the Pete Seeger song Barn av Regnuben, Barn av Regnbuen, Children of the Rainbow. I'm guessing Regnbuen is rainbow, with the Norwegian lyrics by Lillebjørn Nilsen. Two Norwegian women contacted Nilsen, who called his old buddy Pete Seeger to tell him that the song is part of the recovery movement in Norway, and via social media got the word out to gather in the main square closest to the courtroom to sing the song. Oh, this is beautiful. They were hoping for 30 or 40 friends to show up. Instead, a few days later, over 40,000 people showed up in the rain and, holding up umbrellas and roses, peacefully sang the song for 8 minutes. In solidarity, crowds gathered in the main square of 15 other Norwegian cities to sing the same song. The song was also sung in public by crowds in Iceland. Please see the below link, where you can find a video and audio, hint, hint, to see and hear the crowd in Oslo. Time and again, the Norwegians are meeting hatred with love and swamping the hatred. In any case, I added my real tears of joy when I watched and listened to the video. Breivik is a one-man Fox News Rush Limbaugh Glenn Beck ad nauseam, and the Norwegians are gently and proudly defying his worldview by not taking the bait. One short paragraph from the article linked below really sums up what solidarity is all about, says Scott. "There were a few short introductory speeches before the singing began, with the head of a group representing survivors of the attacks, Trond Blatman, thanking everyone for coming to show their sympathy and support as the difficult terror trial ended its second of 10 weeks. Eskil Pedersen, head of the labor youth group AIJF that Breivik attacked on the island of Utøya, killing 69 of his colleagues, claimed that we are gathered not because of him, but because of each other." I read that, and I wanted to make sure that I did share it with you, because that is simply beautiful. Forty 40,000 people singing a song sung by children to a Christian Nazi filled by hate.
and God.
To show my rainbow race.
It's too soon to die. Some folks want to be like an ostrich, bury their heads in the sand. Some think that plastic dreams can uncontrol them with greedy hands. Some folks want to take the easy way, poison bombs, they think we need them. Don't you know you can kill all the unbelievers? There's no shortcut to freedom. One blue sky above, one ocean laughing on our shore, one earth so green and brown. Who could ask? I'll give it one more try to show my rainbow rays. It's too soon to die. Go tell all the little children. Tell all the mothers and fathers too. This is our last chance to learn to share what's been given to me and you. One blue sky above, one ocean laughing over the shore, one earth so green and round. Who could ask for more? And because I love you, I'll give it one more try.
Beautiful moment, worth every second of it. And somewhere in one of those buildings that fronts that square, Anders Breivik, a Christian murderer, a Christian Nazi murderer, had to listen. He couldn't escape it. 40,000 people rejecting his Nazi Christian hatred. In the gentlest way possible. And in fact, the lyrics to that song, you heard interspersed amongst the Norwegian, you heard Pete Seeger. It's a Pete Seeger song, as Scott's note pointed out. Daggum if those lyrics aren't more Christian than anything Anders Breivik ever considered. And that lyric, of course, who could ask, one sky, one blue sky above us,
One ocean lapping at our shores. Who could ask for anything more? Well, let me answer that real quick, because it is Moran Monday. And, you know, the Morans you have always with you. Yes, yes, indeed. Step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Look behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas and you will see Morans of all ages, all sizes, all genders, all nationalities. Freaks! Every last one of them. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Get your program. You can't tell the Morans without a program, but this is the program that can tell the Morans. You just can't tell them much. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Ladies are advised not to set their purses down, and no one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. Uh-oh, it's 30 minutes past the hour. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. That's right, it's Moran Monday. That's the lyric to that song, Who Could Ask for Anything More? Well, we know the answer to that. Willard Romney. Willard Romney went to a $25,000 donation, highfalutin private fundraiser at the home of pizza magnate, Papa John's pizza magnate, I'll never eat another one, John Schnatter, no, really, John Schnatter recently, and speaking there, and why should I, I'm not just going to read this thing to you, we'll let Willard do it in his own voice, because, well, I might get the galloping vomits if I said these things myself. Well, just check it out. Here he is.
What a welcome. What a place this is.
Ah.
My goodness. Who would have imagined pizza could build this? You know what? This is really something. Don't you love this country? What a home this is. What grounds these are. The pool. The golf course. You know, if a Democrat were here, he'd look around and say, no one should live like this. You know? Republicans come here and say, everyone should live like this, all right? This is a real tribute to America, to entrepreneurship.
Yeah, sure, Willard. There's only one problem with living like that. The only way that ever... Well, see, this is in direct counterpoint to the lovely lyrics of Pete Seeger's song. Because, see, if you live on a planet that is, in fact, a closed system, because asteroid mining notwithstanding, no one's figured out how to get off the rock yet and stay off, though we wish Willard would. If everybody lived like John Schnatter, the whole world would collapse. But it's actually physically impossible for everyone, to live like John Schnatter. He's there in Anchorage, Kentucky, John Schnatter is. Because in order to live like John Schnatter, you have to exploit a whole boatload of other human beings. I'm sure John Schnatter likes to consider himself a job creator. But when you're working for $7 and change an hour, plus, I don't know, do they do delivery? Yeah, Papa John's delivery. And you've got to cover your own insurance, and you've got to provide your own vehicle. Well, that ain't much of a job you've created, but the vast majority of the money that is collected one pizza at a time, well, that built John Schnatter's fabulous mansion estate with a pool and a golf course. A river of beer flowing over your grandmother's paisley shawl. Upstairs and down, you might remember from Friday night, right? A man comes down from the bar, he says, sign here. Ignorant statements like Willard's just go to prove that they have no conception whatsoever of the world on which they live. Well, we can have it all. We can take every last bit of it, and we can all be this rich if we's just Republicans. But we can't. Every brick in John Schnatter's mansion has some degree of blood, some degree of agony, some degree of misery, some degree of fear. If there, you know, if there was anything to that whole extra-dimensional ghosty-toasty business, that place would be so haunted you couldn't get on the grounds. Yeah, you're right, Marty. Bugs did pronounce it maroon. What a maroon. Michael noting, Michael who got chills listening to the song from the square in Norway. Michael said, I never liked Papa John's. It tastes, he said, subject line, schnatter. I never liked Papa John's. It tastes like schnot. Last time I ate one, I was in the schnatter for half an hour. He'll be here till Thursday. Try the veal. But what a perfect counterpoint. We want everyone to live like this. Well, who's everyone going to exploit? Or is it just some sort of massive worldwide globe? Well, what do you think the people on them other continents are for? Another Michael writing in. Subject line, because of each other. That and this is beautiful, he said, referring to the song. Pete Seeger will live forever. And there's a website out there, Michael points out, NobelPrizeForPete.org. I like the idea. Patty says, it's a very, very sweet video. She said, I watched the video the other day. My neighbors here in North Dakota told me about it, my right-wing ones. They're from Norway, and I think this might have fixed them a bit. And Patty says, it's just beautiful. Send my thanks, and thanks for playing it. Hugs and love. Right back at you, Patty. Right back at you. Clayton's saying, stop it. A redneck is a mine worker who wore red scarves that bled red on the neck, which indicates one is a worker. That's one origin. Other origins of redneck have to do with working in the hot southern sun. There's not one origin to redneck. And Marty, yeah, I heard Alan West is a near-automatic Moran Monday nominee every time he opens his mouth, and that's true. That is absolutely true. But, Lord, they are queued up in front of us for Moran Monday. I mean, they're the... It's like something from the Charge of the Light Brigade. You know, Morans to the left of me, Morans to the right. Onward we charged. Early nominee for Moran, because I kind of sat on this story and held it, because it's such a delightful moment in Moranity. The coin and the Duke of Edinburgh, this going back to last week, on the 25th of April, braved heavy rain and driving winds. Braved, really, braved. Onward she rode. Despite the rain, despite the dampness of the streets, onward rode the Queen of England. The news report stating the royal couple traveled to the East London dock. All the way to East London? Oh, the bravery! Where she would name a spectacular barge built to mark her jubilee. Excuse me, and I will take correction on this, but doesn't the meaning of jubilee indicate a general forgiveness of debt? No, not that kind of jubilee. This is a Nibs' jubilee. She's not forgiving any debts. Just running up the tab a bit, you know?
the royal couple traveled to the East London dock, where Gloriana is currently moored, awaiting the moment when it will make its way to Wandsworth Bridge on the Thames, from where it will lead the Jubilee pageant on 3 June. Dressed in a bright red coat and hat that cut a swathe, that's a swathe with an E, a swathe through the morning's gloom, the monarch descended a gangway at Greenland Pier without breaking a hip, on the Thames in London's Docklands, bravely boarding the Gloriana. You should see the Gloriana. It's this big, gilded thing that is actually crewed by oarsmen and would look positively magnificent. Well, you know what it looked, you know what it reminded me of the first minute I saw it? If you've ever seen The Lion in Winter, when Eleanor of Aquitaine comes to Chinon to celebrate Christmas, the Christmas court at Chinon, she's riding on a barge. Yeah, one of those with oarsmen. Strout, you bony sods, or I'll beat the hide off your backs. Although the queen was warmly dressed in her deep red coat and hat, the duke was bareheaded and seemed conscious of the weather. Well, I guess we're lucky he's conscious at all, aren't we? At one point he could be heard advising the queen to keep under cover after she had been to inspect the stern of the boat, which bears royal symbols and the vessel's name. You should see this thing. It's got gold paint all over it. It must have cost a fortune. 18 oarsmen will crew it. It is designed based upon boats from Canaletto's famous 18th century painting of a Thames pageant. It incorporates sweet chestnut wood taken from the Duchy of Cornwall estate. It is the vessel is 94 feet length. And meanwhile, otherwhere in the UK, people are suffering under the lash of her government's austerity programs. Austerity? Are the serfs having to tighten their belts a bit? Well, good. They were getting a bit fleshy about the middles, I'm afraid. This is the kind of ostentation that makes people sharpen guillotines. I don't know. Maybe after the Jubilee, she and the King of Spain can go rowing off in search of elephants in Mozambique or some such. Morans. Look, just because you're one of the richest people on earth doesn't mean you can't be a moran. Oh, but they'd love their spectacle. Yeah, I bet they'd love dinner more. It just saying. Morans everywhere. You know, while children are, as Scott from Sweden noted, while children are swarming to the various political youth wings so as to be active participants in their government, back here in America, well, let's zip over to the Brownsville Area School District in Pennsylvania. Seen this one? The Associated Press reporting. Never mind the Associated Press part. This story began when WTAE reported that a 13-year-old girl had been severely scolded and given a detention for refusing to stand and recite the Pledge of Allegiance. Really, in 2012. Now, Mama didn't much care for it when that happened, but, you know, she went through the proper channels. She complained to school officials, and then she complained to the school district itself, and the school district given an opportunity to not be morons, chose to be morons instead. The school district upheld the punishment at a full-on school board meeting. Now, this is without regard to the fact that since about 1943, in a case involving the state of West Virginia before the Supreme Court of the United States, it has been the settled law of the land that you may not compel someone to sit or stand or sing or kneel or pray or pledge. You can't do it. The operative quote coming from then Justice Robert Jackson, who went on to serve as, I do believe, the prosecutor at Nuremberg. He wrote in 1943, if there is any fixed star in our constitutional constellation, it is that no official, high or petty, and by God, when we're talking about the Brownsville school area school district in Pennsylvania, we are talking about petty. No official, high or petty, can prescribe what shall be orthodox in politics, nationalism, religion, or other matters of opinion, or force citizens to confess by word or act their faith therein. That was in 1943, smack dab in the middle of the Second World War. And he did it. He said that in 1943. Can you imagine any member of the Rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, or Scalia, having the kind of courage it takes to say something like that in 2012? Yeah, me neither. And in the Brownsville Area School District, a 13-year-old girl who doesn't want to say the pledge is punished. Now, the funniest part of it all is that the Brownsville Area School District has a solicitor. His name is James Davis. And he said that she had an absolute right to sit silently during the pledge. Uh-oh. I have a feeling the Brownsville Area School District will, with any luck, be paying for the young lady's college. Fascists. Fascists all over the place. Some places they know better how to deal with them. We never had the Nazis marching through our streets in this country. The Norwegians did. And they are much less likely to let fascism get a foothold than are we. Because the fact of the matter is, fascism in this country has a foothold. Indeed. Indeed. Oh, that's not all for the morons. We got lots, lots more. But we may as well take a break hereabouts and then come back to your Moran nominations. Not yet. One last thing. I almost forgot some of the biggest Morans. Listen to this. Okay, I'm going to have to read some of this to you. You noticed, heard, whatever. The really scary music. for pity's sakes. This is too much. It's the election 2012 campaign ad. Well, you can guess. That nasty noise is a hammer hitting molten metal on an anvil, and the no music in wait, let's get this right. In generations past, the church has always been able to count on the faithful to stand up and protect her sacred rights and duties. The church's sacred rights? Wait, what? The church's sacred rights and duties? Not the people that make it? Uh-oh. This generation of Catholics must do the same. This November, Catholics across the nation will be put to the test. I have a feeling they're going to be shot like horses. Oh, wait, I can turn the reverb off now. I'm not trying to sound like the church. Because there's a guy here, and he's got a forge, and he's got metal stuff in it, and he's beating on it with a hammer, and one of them looks like a horseshoe. Yeah, I think they're going to put horseshoes on the... don't blame me. Many issues in America require hard work. Jobs. Taxes. But how do we know energy if we are building in vain? Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it in labor build it labor in vain. Catholics across the nation will have an opportunity to share the future for our generation. Oh, here it comes. And generations to come. Many issues are at stake. The economy going into the fire. But some issues are not negotiable. And, of course, into the fire goes a big metal thing that says, laugh. The protection of life from conception until natural death. Marriage should be reinforced, not redefined. Freedom into the fire. To be melted down, I guess, by that socialist Obama, that Kenyan, that Muslim, that anti-colonialist, forcing the church to buy insurance that goes against her teachings is a violation of religious freedom. No, it's not. When the government tampers with a freedom so fundamental, one shudders to think what lies ahead. Cardinal Dolan said that, you know, when he wasn't covering up priests who were raping little boys. Your vote will affect the future. And this woman comes out of the voting booth with her eyes like all squinty shut, like she's just been in there sort of throwing darts at the ballot and hoping Jesus will take the wheel and take the dart right to whatever Republican she needs, the papacy and the bishops need her to be voting for. And be recorded in eternity. What? Oh, morons. Okay, back up here. Your vote will... that's the whole sentence. Your vote will affect the future and be recorded in eternity. God will send you to hell for not voting the right way. Never mind all that. I guess it's unconfessable? Is that what I'm to understand here? This is a full-on attempt at turning this country into the same sad, sorry theocracy that... you know, we denigrate in others. Will you vote the values? Marriage, life, freedom, that will stand the test of fire? Oh, for pity's sakes. Thanks, Maura, for sending that along. Yeah, you're right. You're right. It does. Robert says, sounds like a movie trailer. This November, one man will return, blah, 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 in a time where, yeah. And it was meant to. Yeah, good question. Is being shot in the head natural death? And, of course, is having a million people bombed a natural... No, right, because my conscience that opposes war doesn't count. Only their conscience that worries about blastocysts and zygotes and embryos. That's the conscience that matters, right? Oh, ye generation of vipers. Okay, I wanted to get that last one in. Now we'll take the break. This is More In Monday. This is The Horn. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. And we're only, well, I saw it there a minute ago. I hate it when I have to stop and check. But I hate doing bad math on the fly. I just do. There it is. Here we go. Yeah, there it is. Yeah, we are only $490 away. $490 away from meeting April's fundraising goal and triggering the Beat the Sweet effect. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. Thanks very much for all y'all do to keep it all going. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. It's More In Monday. Your nominations welcome at 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid.